The Lord's Jealousy, Answer to the Question, Zechariah chapter 8. Again the word of the Lord of hosts came unto me, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion, and I will be in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Zechariah chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. This chapter is a continuation of the message given the prophet in answer to the question of the men from Bethel. It is the positive side of the reply. Chapter 7 is the negative side. It was preparatory to these marvelous prophecies which we are now about to consider. They are so profoundly great and wonderful, so far beyond the ken of mortal man to conceive, that they stagger his reason. How can such things be? We hear him inquire. By faith we understand, the apostle answers, for the worlds or ages were framed not of things which do appear, Hebrews 11 verse 3, but simply by the word of God. Hence, when we believe this fact, we do not hesitate to accept the most stupendous statements as to future events and changes which are due to soon appear in the earth. The Creator, God, who called worlds, planets, and stars into being by the power of His own word, is able to do anything. There is nothing too hard for the Lord. The following series of promises commences with the thrice repeated declaration that the Lord of hosts is addressing his people. It is the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who thus answer the question of these men with the following blessed words of encouragement and hope, and they are able to fulfill every one of these promises. The Lord declares at the outset that he has been jealous for Jerusalem, Zechariah chapter 1, verse 14, and now he repeats the statement with only a slight variation. His anger is stirred to fiery heat against the nations. They showed his temporarily cast-off people no mercy, but rather added to their affliction when they were scattered in their midst. He held those nations responsible for their former cruel treatment of the Jews, even more so today because they should know that the times of the Gentiles are almost over, and they should give up to the Jews their land and temple site. Jehovah will be obliged to wrest it from them. They will not let go of this Jewish property willingly. It is strange that the present-day powers have not learned their lesson from the history of the past. None of the ancient powers who oppressed and persecuted the Jew have remained to tell the story. The words which the Lord spoke to Abraham is still being fulfilled and will continue. I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. Jehovah's next statement is a repetition of his words which are set forth in the first vision. It is a positive declaration and shall have a positive fulfillment. I am returned is his glad announcement. He will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem regardless of all the combined power of Satan and men against such a consummation. It is written, and so shall it be done. Some men would say this promise had a fulfillment in the partial restoration of the Jew from the Babylonian captivity. But that is a very light view to take of this magnificent prophecy. The fact of his return into fellowship and covenant relationship with his ancient people is the very heart and soul of all prophecy. If that falls to the ground, then there is no hope for the nations or the world, because his promise to Abraham is thus become null and void. Someone may say that his promise to Abraham had a fulfillment in Jesus Christ, and all the nations shall be blessed in him. Well, that is so in a measure, as we learn from Galatians 3:16. But there are also a multitude of other scriptures which declare that the nation Israel shall be the first nation to come into the blessing promised through Christ. Individuals may be blessed today through Christ, but later whole nations shall be recipients of God's mercy and favor, but none before the Jews, Romans chapter 11. They will return to their own land, as they are seen doing today, and Jehovah will return to them in the person of the very same Jesus whom they rejected and crucified at his first advent. He will then, in his glory and greatness, dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. It shall become the center of his government, the capital city of his domain in the earth. The light and truth shall go out to all the world from this vantage point in the middle of the globe, and Jerusalem shall be called the City of Truth, Zechariah chapter 8, for two reasons. First, because it is the headquarters of the God of Truth, and second, because it is the location of the people of truth. They shall no longer do iniquity nor speak lies, Zephaniah 3, verse 13. But they shall be known throughout the world as the righteous people. And the mountain of Jehovah of hosts shall be called the Holy Mountain, Zechariah chapter 8, verse 3, American Standard Version, because of the presence of the Holy One. After the above reiterated assurance of Jehovah's favor and presence in Jerusalem, there follows a beautiful picture of its restoration and prosperity. No longer shall the holy city lie desolate, no more shall young and old be cut off in her streets, nor shall the children be fainting for bread in the midst, as was often the case formerly. Prolongation of life and numerous progeny shall be the order of the day, as has been promised. Death will be stayed in that beautiful city of life. There shall no more be an infant of days cut off, nor an old man that hath not filled his days, Isaiah 65, verses 20 through 22. Only the rebellious shall die during the 1,000-year reign of Christ. Life will be visibly reigning instead of death, as at the present time. Death will be the exception then, even as life is now. It will be a halcyon period for Jerusalem and Palestine. There shall be seen the two extremes, age and infancy, alike protected from death and the grave, even as Zechariah declares. There shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age, and the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing, Zechariah chapter 8, verses 4 and 5. The saved remnant of those days will exclaim in astonishment, even as David informs us, "This is the Lord's doings, and it is marvelous in our sight." Psalm 118, verse 23. For no human or natural means could have done it. Jehovah's answer to them we have here in our chapter. If it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of his people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord of hosts? Zechariah chapter 8, verse 6. It is as though God himself might almost be astonished at the mighty accomplishments of those days in behalf of his people. The word translated marvelous is the same one translated hard or difficult in Genesis 18, verses 13 and 14. Sarah laughed when the definite promise was given Abraham of the birth of Isaac. And the Lord said, "Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? Is anything too hard or wonderful for the Lord?" It was, of course, impossible with man, but nothing is impossible with God. He desires us to know that he delights to undertake the difficult problems. All his dealings with man are supernatural and wonderful. He waits until we reach the end of our resources, come to wit's end corner, as the psalmist declares, Psalm 107, verse 27. And then we find him, the all-sufficient one, there waiting to shoulder all the responsibility. It is wonderful what the Lord can and is willing to do for his people if they trust him. All God's ways with the nation Israel were and still are supernatural. Their very beginning was contrary to nature. He waited until Abraham was old and Sarah was barren, and then gave them the promised child. He desired to lay a supernatural basis for his building of the family, and later the nation of Israel, that they and all the nations of the earth might know that God is sovereign in his choice and almighty in his power, and that nothing which he purposes shall fail, and nothing which he has spoken is too hard for him to accomplish. Another thing that the Lord is teaching by doing the impossible is that the first creation, the natural man, is helpless and hopeless. Hence, there must be another creation brought upon the scene, another man must come to the rescue, another source of life must be provided for the human race. This has been accomplished through Christ, the seed of the woman, Genesis 3:15, and the seed of Abraham, Galatians 3:16. It will shortly be manifest in all the world that the Lord's arm is not shortened, but rather the opposite. He is the only one who can save, the only one who can bring order out of chaos. When Israel have destroyed themselves by their own foolishness, begotten of unbelief, then God comes to their rescue. Hosea 13, verse 9. It is always so, as Zechariah intimates in the next two verses. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. And I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and righteousness. Zechariah chapter 8, verses 6 and 7. We cannot comprehend how anyone can deny the conversion of the Jews and their literal return to their land after reading such a great and comprehensive promise of Jehovah. It has never yet been fulfilled, as is evident. Therefore, it is still future. From the land of the rising of the sun, and from the land of the going down of the sun, as is the Hebrew, there shall come the multitude of God's ancient people to possess the land of promise. A mere handful returned after the Babylonian captivity, but that does not exhaust this promise. Zechariah himself was a part of that remnant, but his prophecy relates to the future, as it is plainly evident. Also at that time, they were not brought back from the whole world, but only from one direction, from the east, also called the north, because the invasion of Babylon and Persia was by way of the north. It was only after the Roman invasion, the second dispersion of the Jews, that they were scattered to the four winds of heaven, or throughout the whole world. Another fact which proves this restoration yet future is that it is followed by the conversion of the whole of Israel. They shall be Jehovah's people, and he will be their God in truth and righteousness. Being their God in truth and righteousness has never yet been in evidence. Their covenant relationship and fellowship with the Lord will be complete and perfect when their restoration to the land is a reality. The present time is the Lo-Ami, not my people, period of Israel's history, when they as a nation are separated from the Lord and given over into the hands of their enemies. But when those years of chastisement are ended, God shall again acknowledge them as Ami, my people, even as the prophet Hosea, speaking for the Lord, declares, I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness, in judgment, and in loving kindness, and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Lord. Hosea chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. They will be the beloved wife of Jehovah on earth, faithful to him forever, even as the wife of the Lamb in heaven, held by the power of his own constraining love. They shall walk before God and with God, with a perfect heart for 1,000 years as the nation of righteousness throughout the rest of their national history. Then is given a word of encouragement to the remnant who shall be in evidence in the rebuilding of Jerusalem, prefaced by, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Let your hands be strong, ye that hear in these days these words by the mouth of the prophets, which were in the day that the foundation of the house of the Lord of hosts was laid, that the temple might be built. Zechariah chapter 8, verse 9. Let your hands be strong signifies to be of good courage and reminds us of the words of Haggai, colleague and contemporary of Zechariah. Be strong, O Zerubbabel, said Jehovah, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Josedech, the high priest, and be strong, O ye people of the land, and work. Haggai 2, verse 4. In Zechariah, the exhortation refers not only to the temple building, as in Haggai, but to the doing of the will of God in all things, both in the case of the individual as well as the entire nation. They were all called to hear and obey the voice of the prophets who were raised up in the past and will be raised up in the future to speak unto the people. The two witnesses are especially in view in the latter connection. The words, that the temple might be built, is added as a more precise definition of the time to which the prophet refers, for there had already been two beginnings of the building of the temple. In the seventh month of the first year after the return of the first colony of the captives under the leadership of Zerubbabel and Joshua, the altar was set upon its base, and the sacrificial regime commenced again. And in the second year the foundation was laid, amid the solemn yet happy scenes recorded in Ezra 3. But the difficulties encountered by the intrigues and lying accusations of the Samaritans and other enemies in the land caused the work to cease. They excused themselves by saying, "The time is not come that Jehovah's house should be built," with the result that for 13 years the work was suspended. In the second year of Darius, king of Persia, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah and Haggai, and they roused the people by rebukes, appeals, and exhortations to again arise and build. It was then that they took up the task with renewed faith and vigor, and with set purpose of heart began to build. It was from that day that the Lord gave his word that he would bless them. Haggai 2 verse 19. We believe that here is a hint of the delay of the future restoration when the remnant, who will have returned, shall begin to build the temple, but will not be allowed to finish it because of their enemies, until the Lord appears to their help and strength. The time between, after the work ceased and its beginning again, is considered and contrasted with the period after they obeyed the voice of the Lord.